Chronicles of the Order, a short story anthology set in the world of Geist.
The Destruction of Station One by Chooch Schubert. Deidre walked towards the ramp with her head held high and chest puffed out. She hoped that her body showed the confidence that her spirit lacked. She shaded her eyes with a hand as she looked up at the enormous flying machine approaching the platform. She had never been this close to one of the Imperial dirigibles and was astonished at how gentle the giant craft looked as it drifted above. Reaching the top of the first ramp tier, she looked onto the street for Arvid. She knew it was best that he stay hidden, but seeing him would help to steady her nerves. She tugged on her left earlobe just in case her brother was looking, their sign of "I'm going in," and was rewarded with a soothing warmth through her nervous stomach. As Deidre walked up the second and third tier ramps, she adjusted her oversized coat. She folded the cuffs of the long sleeves so that they did not engulf her hands, and ensured that all the buttons were fastened. Arvid had been mad that she got to wear the uniform and go into the station. While it was true that the uniform fit her twin better, his 12th year had broadened his shoulders. She was much more sensitive. If they could not do a job together, then it was safest for her to go rather than him. In truth, she would have preferred that he went in her place. While her sensitivity could help in avoiding sticky situations, his strength was useful to get out of them. She quickened her pace as she could clearly hear the soldiers on the platform in the dirigible now, casting ropes as well as good-humored insults at one another. She did not move fast enough to draw attention to herself, but she wanted to be on the platform with as much chaos around as possible. Deidre crested the last ramp to the platform, which was loaded with barrels, boxes, and bags. She looked up to the top of the building that loomed far above the dock. Where she was now even with the airship deck, she could see crewmen stepping across a span with a gas hose to connect to the side of the great balloon. Men and women started flooding over the gangplank just as it hit the portico with a thud. Deidre did not know how long the ship had been away. Judging by the length of the facial hair, not to mention the smell of the people clamoring off the deck, it must have been a long time. Like a fish swimming upstream, the girl struggled to make her way to the gangplank as soldiers pushed past. She crossed onto the deck of the airship and shuffled to the side, clearing the way for the rest of the crew to disembark. Most of the soldiers descended the ramps and dispersed into the city below. Technically, they were in Vermilion. However, this area was not considered by the locals to be part of the capital city proper. Widely known as the Edge, this part of the city was made up of housing, workshops, and stores of the less affluent citizens. It was built on marshland, so everybody living here was used to getting dirty. Those of better fortune lived progressively closer to the palace located in the center of the lagoon. The dirigible repair and refueling stations were built out on the edge for a handful of reasons. Of greatest importance was the danger that something could happen to cause the delicate mixture of gases used in balloons to explode. Those gases were the only way known to make the dirigibles lighter than air. Given the utility of such vehicles, the benefits far outweighed the risks.
"You there!"
came a shout from the dock. Deidre's blood ran cold, and she froze in place, not daring to move a muscle. "This is it," she thought. "I failed, and I'm going to get arrested. Dad's going to beat me blue if I ever make it out of the clink."
"Hey, girl! I'm talking to you!"
The voice came again, louder this time. Deidre turned to face the man. She brushed a stray tuft of black hair behind an ear and forced a smile. "Yes, sir?"
"Ah, so you can hear. I hope you can lift as well, cadet. There are bags and baskets what need carrying off that boat."
The man pointed a sausage finger to the other side of the deck.
"And they're not going to move themselves."
"Yes, sir. Right away." Deidre let out a breath that she did not realize she was holding. She jogged across the deck to the pile of containers indicated. "He called me cadet. This is going to work after all." The relief was so great that she was more than happy to carry everything in the pile off onto the dock. As she moved the collection of trash and cargo, Deidre took the opportunity to scan the ship for access inside and below decks. There were still a few soldiers and other people around. One soldier was standing at attention near a large cabinet. The others were moving various equipment about. In the time it took to transfer everything from the airship to the docks, everybody, save the soldier on guard, had completed their work and debarked. Deidre had just formulated her plan of action when she set the last basket down on the dock. A bead of sweat rolled into one of her bright blue eyes. She stood and wiped at her eye, then her forehead with a sleeve. "I'll just consider the stone I'm going to steal as payment for an afternoon's work." The thought made her laugh as she clambered back onto the ship. A weirstone, imbued with the power of a geist, was a rare enough object that she could barely earn enough to buy one, even if she slaved away for 12 hours a day until she was an adult. She could hear footsteps behind her, so she turned to face the dockmaster, triumphant in the menial task she had just completed. Instead of facing the overweight man, she was surprised to find a rather tall woman in an Imperial Guard uniform. The woman walked out from the building and said, "Tillman, get your sweet ass over here."
"Sir, the captain has ordered me to guard the, material here."
Deidre turned around to see that the source of the voice was the soldier that was standing guard. The female commander cleared her throat.
"Well, the captain is not here, is he? And seeing that I am the ranking officer, I suppose you had better do what I say."
"But, Nez, I—"
"You will address me as Commander Hoff, soldier. Now come along, I have a special assignment for you, and I do not have all day. Cadet, do you think you can take over for Mr. Tillman here and stand watch until he returns?"
the commander said. Deidre had been looking back and forth between them. Now she looked over her shoulder to find who Commander Hoff was addressing.
"Oh, right, that's me."
"Of course you.
Do you see any other cadets here?"
"No, I did not think so."
"Well, can you follow my order?"
"If I cannot motivate even one girl, I should think they'll take away my stripes."
"Yes, ma'am," Deidre said, a nervous lilt to her voice. The woman raised an eyebrow.
I mean, sir. Yes, sir," she said, then ran to where the soldier stood guard and did her best to mimic the stance.
"There we go.
Now, Mr. Tillman, kindly follow me."
She turned on her heel and walked back into the warehouse without waiting to see if he followed. The soldier eyed Deidre up and down.
"You don't look like much, but being at the repair dock, there shouldn't be any trouble. If anybody not part of the Imperial Guard comes around, you yell out. Somebody in the warehouse should hear you."
"Yes, sir."
"If anything happens to these cargo, they'll have my head. But before they take that, I can tell you I'll have your hide, girl."
Deidre nodded.
"All right, then. I shouldn't be gone more than an hour. Look alive."
Deidre watched the soldier run into the warehouse, a lustful gleam in his eye, before she exhaled.
"What was that all about?" she wondered aloud.
She walked across to the railing to get a good look at the ground below. With the hope that Arvid was down there and looking, she looked toward the sky and scratched at her chin. She did not feel anything and had no idea if he saw her in position sign, but decided to get on with the task at hand. She walked down one side of the deck and noted the placement of doors, trying to guess which ones would be cabins and which would lead deeper within. To get to one of the weirstones that powered the vessel, she needed to get into the engineering compartments. Before walking too far, she turned around and jogged back to where she should be keeping watch. No need to arouse suspicion any earlier than necessary. Arriving back at the post, she was pleased to see that the deck and dock were still empty. She considered the cabinet that she was meant to be guarding. That soldier seemed to think this was very important. And Dad always said things that are very important are usually very valuable. There did not appear to be any kind of locks. So she pulled up on the latch and peeked inside. Seeing nothing but boxes, she opened the door wide. She pulled out one of the boxes and placed it on top of the cabinet, then opened the latch on the box and slowly opened the lid. Deidre's jaw dropped down and she rubbed at one of her eyes, not believing what she was seeing. Her heart raced, but it did not feel like the racing of natural excitement. She turned to look behind, knowing exactly what she would find. Arvid.
"What did you find?"
he whispered, walking in a crouch toward his sister.
"You shouldn't be up here. Somebody might see you."
Deidre herself crouched down, though she didn't quite know why.
"I couldn't see what was happening, but I could feel that you were really worried. Then your heart was pounding so hard." "It's all right. I just had to lift a bunch of boxes and stuff. They believe I'm a cadet and put me to work." "What did you find there? I felt something strong."
"What I found means I don't have to go and find engineering. Look."
The boy looked inside the box. There were three rows of weirstones, each row consisting of four of the deep blue orbs. He looked at his sister with wide eyes.
"This is amazing. These are all that we'll ever need. And look,
she said.
There are boxes and boxes of them. Here, take these.
She closed the lid and handed it to her brother.
You take these straight home, and I'll put as many as I can into the sack and meet you there. No. These are plenty. Let's just leave now.
But it'll only take a minute.
Go, I'll catch you up.
He wanted to protest, but could sense that it would not do any good.
Just hurry,
he said, and ran back across the deck and down the ramps. The next box Deidre hefted felt to be the same weight, but she opened the lid to make sure. Sure enough, there were 12 shimmering stones. She picked one up from its compartment and held it up to the sunlight, mesmerized by the color and white gleam that shone across it. She was shaken from her reverie by the sound of boots forcefully striking the deck. She looked up, seeing a man in a black cloak running from the back of the airship. She gripped the weirstone tight and turned to flee.
Stop, girl!
Yelled the man, charging toward her.
Danger! Stop! Stop her!
From somewhere in the vessel, a bell rang out, joined by others in short order. Deidre ran as fast as she could down the ramp. She repeated in her mind,
Run! Just run!
Feeling some relief from her brother's understanding of the plea. There were others coming after them now. Turning from one landing to start down the next ramp, she looked up and saw the first man again, impossibly closer than Deidre thought he should have been. She noticed now that only the inside of the man's cloak was black. It was green on the outside. He was joined by another man in a similar cloak, only blue. It only took a moment for recognition of those cloaks to sink in. Deacons! Her fear was confirmed when the man in back began pulling on a set of leather gauntlets, runes flashing in the sunlight. Deidre ran on with renewed vigor as she reached the ground and started running toward a set of buildings. She heard another man call out from just inside the ground floor of the warehouse.
That's far enough, girl.
Stop or drop. The girl did not heed the warning and ran on with reckless abandon. The man coming out of the warehouse was wielding a crossbow, with a bolt already knocked. He took aim at the girl, and just as he loosed the projectile, the deacon in the green cloak cried out,
No, you fool!
But it was too late. The bolt went through Deidre's back, making her limbs seize and her body fall to the ground. The weirstone came free from her hand, striking the ground hard. She landed on her stomach, momentum causing her to roll. A howl of pain cut short as the bolt ripped a wide gash in her skin before snapping in half. She rolled twice more before stopping again on her stomach. The deacon did not slow as he ran to the girl. He yelled at the soldier who had shot the lass.
By the bones, you idiot! Stay your weapons and hold the people back!
The last referring to a crowd of laborers and craftspeople that were coming out of their shops to see what the noise was about. His only consolation was that the soldiers were forbidden from carrying pistols because of the danger of exploding the lifting gas. He slowed only as he reached Deidre and dropped to his knees.
Did you see it, Addison?
The deacon in blue asked, slowing behind him.
No, not yet.
He looked frantically on the ground around the girl, then carefully turned her over. Addison looked up at his partner, whose face had gone as pale as his, and he jumped to his feet. The weirstone was covered in Deidre's blood.
Guards! More guards! Turn these people away at once! And keep your weapons sheathed! We cannot have any more blood!
He held out his arms and backed away from the weirstone, then looked at his partner.
What do you think will happen, Galen?
You're the sensitive. I'm just the muscle, he chuckled. Addison considered a moment.
Maybe nothing, but probably something. I don't know if it's more dangerous to pick it up and take it to the Abbey, or deal with it here.
Perhaps better take it. We would be over water, at least.
No. No, why don't you try and drain it?
They had been bonded long enough that Galen, as an active, knew to trust his sensitive's judgment. With no further talk necessary, Addison opened his center wide, seeking out any sign of unliving near them. Galen gave him a sideways glance, and at seeing his partner shake his head, he called on Shaste. One of the runes of his gauntlet flickered to life, and a surge of green energy pooled in his palm. With it, he drew on the Geist power trapped in the weirstone. The surge of power rushed into his outstretched hands, filling him with a warm euphoria. Arvid crawled between the legs of a guard and ran towards the deacons and his sister, yelling,
It's too late!
But this Addison had just realized on his own. Galen could smell the stench of undead as Addison shared the power of his center across the bond. He released the first rune and called on Adian, whose blue fire swirled around his hands before being cast out to repulse the crowd away from the girl's body and the stone. The air resounded with a crack louder than cannon fire, causing the growing crowd to cower in fear even as they were repulsed backward. Arvid was pushed back into the crowd and, now seen, restrained by the guard. More soldiers streamed from the streets and the warehouse to assist in crowd control. Galen closed his hand, quelling the rune of repulsion, and addressed the new guards. "Push these people as far back as you can. Quickly, down the street. They need to be as far away as possible."
"Arv, run home."
The boy could hear his sister's voice, the words louder in his own head than from her lips.
"Run home and get help. There's nothing you can do for me here."
Arvid turned and ran up the street toward home. His father would know what to do. He dropped the heavy box of stones after a few strides so that he could run faster. With calls of order and sour scowls, the soldiers convinced the gathered crowd to back up, grudgingly giving up their view of the deacons of the order. They stopped, however, as the ground burst open near the girl. Wind whipped the cloaks around the deacons' bodies, and a shrieking howl reverberated off of the buildings.
"Unholy bones!" cursed Addison.
Where the ungifted denizens around them saw only disturbed earth, he witnessed a violent vortex exploding from the ground. His senses were assaulted by the howling of wind and power. The reeking stench of carrion left decaying under a scorching sun, the blinding light of energy from the other side. Even the city folk, however, could smell the defecation that was sliding down one of the guard's legs. He turned around and began shuffling toward the deacons, leaving a trail of warm waste. His face had gone slack, and saliva drooled off of his chin. Addison reached for the leather strop in his belt pouch. A strop was the sensitive's primary tool, the counterpart to an active's gauntlets. He invoked Kebinar, one of his runes of seeing, and shared his vision with Galen. The maelstrom of power changed hues as the gift of Kebinar showed them the truth of the matter. Addison smiled to his partner.
"We're dealing with a ray. That's not so bad."
"I agree. I prefer it to a ghast."
But no geist drawn by a blood-soaked weirstone could be taken lightly. Both deacons knew that if they did not dispatch the ray quickly and deal with the stone, they were likely to have multiple geists to deal with.
"Do you have any other good news for me?" Galen asked.
The sensitive spread his center further to detect how many people were now possessed by the geist. He was heartened to see only the one guard. He sensed Galen's relief as well and pulled his center back to him. The wind continued to whip their cloaks around them. There were dark storm clouds rolling in, and a thunderclap sounded. Galen reached for Deant, immediately thrusting his hand toward the possessed guard, who slid back to the wall of a building and stood immobilized by the rune of movement. The storm intensified, and the gusts of wind caused the giant airship above them to buck against its moorings. The violent movement broke loose the hose that was pumping gas into the ballasts of the dirigible. Closing his fist around Deant, he again called Chaste. Galen held his hands towards the base of the geist and braced himself for the surge of power. He failed to hold back a moan of pleasure as he was flooded with the geist's essence, though the closest sensation he would ever be able to compare it to is that of inebriation. The power had the effect of heightening his senses rather than dulling them. The tendril of energy from the geist to the guard was ceased, and his body slumped down the wall to rest on the ground. The poor man was going to have a terrible headache and an embarrassing walk home in his stained clothing, Galen thought, but would probably live through his short possession. Addison again cast out his center, but the weakened geist was not able to take control of any more people. He passed the message to his partner through their bond.
"It's all clear to end this thing."
The active clapped his hands together and thumbed Chitir. As the rune came to life, he separated his hands, revealing bolts of electricity that flicked from palm to palm, a shower of sparks swirling around his fingers. He thrust his open hands towards the vortex, causing the lightning to shoot forth and strike the geist. A roar erupted from the mass of malevolent energy. The deacons witnessed a strobing swirl of lights as the entity folded in on itself. Those town people still brave enough to watch saw only flickering bolts of lightning passing from Galen into the air. Deidre sat bolt upright and yelled,
"Fire!"
Addison felt it too, and dove into Galen, causing both men to fall onto and cover the girl.
"We need Yeva."
He passed through the bond as they fell. In the span of an eye blink, the active invoked the rune, causing a shield of fire to surround the three of them. Before dissipating, as if inspired by the method of its own demise, the Geist Storm shot forth a flash of lightning that struck the deck of the airship. The sparks flying ignited the surrounding air filled with the potent blend of gases that had been spilling from the source hose, as well as the blimp's reserves. A deafening explosion rocked the buildings nearby, sending sound waves reverberating across the land to be heard all the way at the top of Silk Road. The fireball of gas spread out in all directions, but was soon eclipsed as the grand balloon itself erupted in a violent blast. The windows of the once proud ship shattered, sending slivers of glass raining out over 100 yards. Without the means of lift, the ship fell straight down, instantly snapping the mooring lines that had held it close to the dock in the sky. The ground trembled at the impact, but the sound of the shearing wood, cargo, and furniture was overtaken by a third detonation as the fueling tank at the center of the warehouse succumbed to the tongue of flames that traveled up the supply hose. The center of the warehouse erupted in a sphere of destruction, impaling all nearby buildings with fragments of wood, metal, and glass. Those materials left behind blazed in an inferno matched only by the active deacon's rune of Piet, the cleansing flame. The shockwaves washed over the people in the streets, each more powerful than the last. The glass of all the surrounding buildings had shattered, creating a sparkling rain of death. As each compression wave hit their bodies, the laborers and guards were tossed like rag dolls. Internal organs ruptured and eardrums shattered. The glass falling from the sky ripped clothing and flesh, flaying them open in the streets. Ash fell down and wood creaked as the echoes of destruction carried to the horizon. Galen, panting and slick with sweat, closed off Yeva. The flaming shield abated as he stood to survey the carnage around him. Addison sat up on his knees and checked the girl's pulse. He was gratified that Deidre's heart was still beating, though her breathing was shallow. Several days after the destruction of Station 1, Deidre was led into the office of Melisande Troop, Presbyter of the Young. She was a middle-aged woman with silvered hair. Already seated in the office were the two deacons that had defeated the Geist and saved Deidre's life. They smiled, and one indicated a chair for her to sit on. She sat slowly, the wound in her back quite tender to any sort of touch or sudden motion.
"Hello, young lady," the woman said. "I am Presbyter Troop. Do you know what a presbyter is?"
The girl looked from face to face, not knowing what to say.
"No, ma'am, I don't." "Well, I'll tell you that I am one of the highest-ranking officials here at the Abbey. Am I correct in understanding that you have been through quite an ordeal?"
The girl nodded, but did not speak.
"I would like you to tell me about it. What you saw, what you heard, and what you felt from the time you arrived at the repair station."
Deidre could not think of a reason to lie about the events. The deacons had seen everything, or near enough. She also could not think of a reason to mention her brother. So while she mostly told the truth, she indicated that she was alone in this endeavor. Through the telling, the presbyter's face did not change expression. She was not cold, and in fact held a gentle smile the whole time, nodding little encouragements when Deidre stammered. But the girl could not tell if what she said was good, bad, or indifferent. Just how much trouble was she going to get in? At least Arvid had that box. Father could not get too angry if their haul was 12 times what they had imagined getting. After hearing the tale, the woman paused in a moment of contemplation. Then she asked, "Do you know what this is?" She opened a drawer, withdrew a small black stone, and placed it onto the surface of the desk. "It's a weir stone, but that one's used up."
"Very good. This is not just any weir stone, however. This is the one that you stole.
You were very lucky that these deacons were present to defeat the Geist that sprang forth, and that they were able to not only defeat it, but cause a drain large enough to deplete the stone."
"Yes, ma'am, I'm very lucky."
Her father had taught her that when caught, or questioned under suspicion, it always paid to be polite and complimentary when dealing with authorities. "And we are all lucky that they recovered this." She pulled a box from the drawer and set it on the desk. It was the same size as the box that held the stones, and it was covered in blood.
"Arvid,"
Deidre said, tears welling in her eyes.
"No, no, do not worry, he's all right." He dropped the case before running home to get help. He's okay? Can I see him?
She asked, her lower lip quivering.
Yes, you can see him, but not quite yet. We will have some more questions. What happened at the station is a very rare event. These stones were being used as a trial by the Imperial Fleet. They are a very special type of weirstone, designed to be used in a specific way. Your blood had an unexpected effect. I am happy to say that their use has been ceased, and all weirstones of this kind have been destroyed. The blood on this case is that of those inhabitants of the Edge that were caught up in the destruction of the station. Deacon Drew here, the man in the green cloak nodded at Deidre, was able to retrieve the box and withdraw the stones before they also touched blood. I shudder to think what would have happened if that had transpired. Her gaze seemed to look through Deidre, before she shook her head and again smiled at the girl. The events of a few days ago, coupled with my interview of your brother and your own testimony just now, have revealed that you are special children. Very special indeed. In all of my years with the Order, I have never seen a bond so strong between children, nor untrained perception so keen. We would like to extend an invitation for you and your brother to come stay here at the Abbey and receive training in our ways. Deidre could not dream of a more sudden change of events. She was expecting to hear what method would be employed to take her life, and instead they were offering to train her. Excuse me, ma'am. You want to train me? To train us? Yes, I do. You and your brother are clearly very talented, not to mention supremely dangerous judging from this ordeal. If your power were ever to develop, I certainly want it to be in the ways of the Order, to assist us in battling the unliving. But what about the Emperor? Now there, we need to make a little deal. In exchange for our training, housing, and caring for you, I will need you to make a solemn oath that you will never speak of these events to another person. Not your father, not friends. Don't even speak of it again to anyone in this very room. You see, nobody else survived the destruction of the station, so we are the only ones who know what truly happened. Can you do that? I can keep a secret, Deidre said with a solemn nod. Good, I knew that you could. We have already spoken to your father. We have made him certain assurances, and he has agreed to abide by our terms. Phew, I was scared that if I ever made it out of here alive, he'd tan my backside. Deidre relaxed for the first time since the explosion. The adults all had a chuckle at this. No, he will be made very comfortable and has agreed to give up his current business as well, so as to remove the possibility of any run-ins with the Imperial Guards, said the presbyter. Can I see my brother? Asked Deidre, concern reflected in her now clear eyes. Indeed you can. The presbyter stood up and extended her hand. Deidre took it and smiled at her. The deacon stood as well and took turns gently hugging her. Deacons Wright and Drew will show you to where Arvid is waiting. Welcome to the Abbey, Deidre. Study hard, stay out of trouble, and I have no doubt that one day you'll become a full-fledged member in the Order of the Eye and the Fist.
Thanks for listening. Chronicles of the Order is copyright 2010, and all rights are reserved by the authors. If you want to find out more about Chronicles of the Order or the mass market paperback release of Geist from Ace Books, then please go to booksoftheorder.com.